Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Welcome to Up to 90.
Hello, everybody.
Hello, everybody.
Up to 90.
People are going to think it's the high-low if we continue to speak in an English accent. Have you ever listened to that podcast?
No, I haven't actually. Do you know what? In fairness, in the last few weeks, I've actually started listening to some podcasts because I've just been out for a walk by myself.
Oh my gosh, so you're becoming au fait with the medium because you never listen to podcasts.
I didn't, but to be honest, like, it was just because my commute wasn't suitable for listening to podcasts. And then
it was a power of love commute.
Yeah, power of love. So I just didn't really get the opportunity, because when I think back to it now, the madness of it all, say, like, so we were going into town once a week to do the podcast, and then you were gigging however many nights a week, and then you're doing, like, you know, fucking cleaning the gaff and getting shit for ready for school tomorrow. And I honestly think that, don't get me wrong, I wish it was all over and all the rest of it, but I honestly think I was fucking exhausted. I think that's why for the first few months I didn't give a shit about lockdown, because I was just like, thanks be to Jesus. Honestly.
I know. Well, listen, I think it definitely, and again, you know, I'll preface this obviously with the caveat, like, so sad, it's like been a terrible time for people, all the rest, but it's definitely given us a bit of a break.
Oh, totally. Like,
I mean, do you remember the days when we would just be schlepping in to that studio, like, to record the podcast? I mean, now it is sad because I have forgotten what you look like. It's always very strange at the Zoom parties when I see your face. It's really odd.
I know, it is strange. But then at the same time, we would have spent so much time on the phone together, and it never felt any different when I was in, like, we were talking in person. So for me, obviously, I'd much prefer for us to be face to face, but I don't feel like anything is lost. If anything, I'd say we're probably more open in this way, if that makes sense. Does it?
I think I probably am. I think I am a bit more open when it's just audio.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, I don't know, because sometimes you can kind of you can get distracted by someone else's, like, movements, or, you know, I suppose there's so much communication when you're with the person that isn't speaking. There's so much more going on.
Of course. And this is when you hit me with, because whenever we even touch upon this conversation as adults, I feel somebody hits you with that statistic. 80% of communication is nonverbal. You're like, I get it. I do. But it's true. I think because I'm not making eye contact with you, it's just so much easier to spill my guts.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Because I probably would have been sitting there staring vaping. Into your vaping while staring into your fucking soul.
Up to 90, up to 90, up to 90 with Emma and Julie.
Do you know what it is? It's just when that curl, when I can sense you're starting to smile, that's what throws me off.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done. I'm gone. But no, I think definitely I'm much more into bearing the soul since lockdown started. I think a lot of that is due to the fact that we're not. Maybe it's because as well you're at home, you're more comfortable. Like I always feel in a studio, the walls have ears. And they do, because it's a studio. It's a podcast. Like, the walls literally do have ears.
Well, there was a lot of time going into the studio in the dead of night trying to open those fucking locks.
And the locks. Us
whispering for some reason. Like, we've already gone through. How many doors would we have to have gone through? Like, five? We've opened several locks. It's like fucking Indiana Jones, this shit. And we finally get into the studio, but we're still whispering just in case.
What I really find very funny, Emma, about our Indiana Jones, as you say, ventures into Headstuff Studios in the dead of night, the funniest part of it all, like with the locks, is that no matter how long we spend struggling with the locks, we still get an email the next day from poor, long-suffering Paddy to say that the door had been left wide open and we just need to lock the door because all the podcast equipment is in the studio. Now, Paddy, we do get it. We do get that the equipment is in the studio. We do get that we're supposed to lock the doors. But come 10 o'clock at night, we really, there are very little fucks given.
We've been up since six.
You're saying things like this fucking scooter. I'm talking about like, how am I going to get pregnant? Like, this is my ovulation day and I was in here recording a bloody podcast. Like, the mood isn't high. Spirits aren't high.
No.
And sometimes we do leave that door swinging because we just want to see what's going to happen.
They're lucky we didn't fucking torch the place. Come on, we'll just do an insurance job. We're bound to get a part of the push. That's probably what they wanted us to fucking do. That's why they kept giving us the keys. Because they were like, look, these folks are bound to leave the place wide open. This is the only way we're going to make a bit of cash out of them.
It's kind of like I used to leave my Sequento unlocked when I lived in North Cork City. Because I was just like, please, can someone steal it? I don't want to have to deal with it. That's why the Headstuff boys, they're kind of leaving, you know, they're leaving the cherry can by the door, box of matches and loads of keys. And they're like, look, one of these days they're going to say, fuck the keys and just go for the jerry can. But we never did it. We never succumbed to your little trap, Paddy and Alan. if they are your real names.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the way I said I'd been listening to podcasts and I listened to one recently. And I must have been premenstrual or something, but I actually got a little bit angry with a beloved Irish household name, personality, celebrity.
Oh, it's not like you to get that angry, Emma.
No, I'll tell you.
Tell me, are we going to name this person? Of course.
Now, you see, maybe this is on me. Maybe this is a gendered thing. As I said, maybe I was premenstrual, but I got quite annoyed. Like, not overly annoyed, but I was a bit just like, handy for you, wasn't it, love? So anyway, I'm listening to Keith Walsh's new podcast, and he's interviewing Baz Ashwami, because I was like, oh, I'm going to give this a listen to people that I like. You know, I'm like, this will probably be entertaining. This will probably be fun, which it was. And they're both very like comfortable chatting to each other, whatever. But what pissed me off was Baz was talking about kind of after he had left RT radio. Do you remember he was doing the stint with Lucy Kennedy for a while after Jerry Ryan passed away? And the two of them.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah.
And the two of them were doing that for a while. And then that
I really liked Lucy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone loves Lucy.
She's great. Yeah.
And so he kind of left Orty, and it wasn't really under great circumstances. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes, yeah. We all remember that. Yeah. So it wasn't the best. Wasn't the best circumstances for sure.
He wasn't going through a good time and whatever, and was pretty low and feeling like everything had gone to the shits and whatever. Grand. I totally accepted that part. But then what he went on to say was, he said that he just had to pick himself up and kind of just get on with it and make something happen. So I'm with him up to this point. And then he said what he did was, he rented this tiny little office, and he went to this office every day with his laptop, and he brought a little heater with him, and he's in this office with his big jacket on, and he just went into that office every day like he had a job. You know, he didn't have a job, but he was like just opening that laptop every day, and he was writing and he was making stuff happen and all the rest of it. Grand. But this is that was the point that I got angry, because, say, for example,
I'm totally with you, girl. I know exactly why you got yes.
It annoyed me because he didn't realize the privilege, the gender privilege of that. So say if I had been in a nice job in RT getting paid, you know, compared to the average salary, fucking nice, nice fucking money. And I made a big, big fucking boo-boo, and that went to the shits. Now, that happens to everyone. Everyone makes mistakes. But I can believe you. And it's what me and you, okay, obviously we don't have a deadly TV show like How to Kill Your Mammy, unfortunately. But we have been trying to fucking pull up our bootstraps and make it happen while fucking being at home and emptying the dishwasher and cleaning the gaff and sorting out all the fucking shite. And it was like, the thing that annoyed me as well, and I'm sure it's just because he's slagging whatever, and I'm sure it's because of his premenstrual, but never once did this fucker thank his wife and say, well, do you know what? I wouldn't have been able to do that without her taking care of all the shit at home.
Yeah, because somebody has to. Like, I mean, that's the problem, is that, like, I think the whole making it happen thing, like, generally, if you're the person at home looking after the kids, like, you kind of have to make it happen, you know, in the dead of night. Like, that's why you're going into a podcast studio at 9 p.m. You're saying, hey, Julie, can I record the podcast at 9?
Yeah.
You're like, oh.
But if you're, okay, as well, and if you're part,
making it happen, it's not, like, I mean, it is a luxury to get up in the morning and say, I'm going to make this happen between the hours of 9 and 5. Like, nobody wants to be making it happen in a podcast studio at 10 p.m. with your scooter in one hand and a bunch of jail keys in the other. Like,
don't get me wrong. Like, you know, like, especially if you're in a partnership with somebody and you have kids, like, and like you, you're able, and it's like a vice versa give and take thing. You're able to go out and do the podcast and do the bits that you want to do, because the other person then is picking up the slack, and then vice versa, you do that for them. So this kind of lone wolf thing of, like, he's like, at this stage, he has a wife and he has 4 children.
I know.
And he had the luxury of being able to, like, I just had to get out of the house and go to my little office every day. I was like, fucking handy out for you. Now, don't get me wrong, I like him. I think he's very charismatic. I think he's very funny. It was a nice listen. But I'm just talking about, like, the...
It infuriated you.
Didn't realise the, you know, the luxury that he had. And a lot of, you know, obviously a lot of the interview was kind of like jokey and, oh, Jesus, like, she just be wrecking my head. And of course, you'd be saying that about Fred. I'd be saying that about Jane. But then when things were kind of getting, like, you know, into, like, the deepness of reality, thank your fucking missus for keeping the show going at home.
I know. Well, I was going to say, it surprises
and
me.
And I'm sure he does in the privacy of his own home and whatever. Yeah. And all his, you know, everyone who matters knows how thankfully is to her. But just fucking say it once if you're going to talk about heading out to an office. When, like, I would love to do that, but I could not justify doing something like that if I did not have a tangible income. to back up renting out that office. You know yourself, like, you'd only rent out an office if you were like, well, I'm going to be defo getting X amount of money from this, so I can, you know, I can get the office.
I mean, that in and of itself is, you know, a bit of an indulgence, let's face it. But I do think it does surprise me that he didn't thank the missus. I mean, he is all, you know, I'm sure, as you say,
that maybe I don't think he did.
Of his own home. He could have, maybe he was edited out, who knows. But as you
or
say,
maybe I was just so infuriated I didn't hear that part.
I'd say you switched off before the last 5 minutes. Probably. So maybe it was the last 5 minutes. But I probably just says so much about, like, we all have these kind of, I guess it, we can't, we, I suppose we're all guilty of this, that you can't see beyond your own privilege. So even say, now the last few days, now I would be somebody, I mean, it's kind of different, I think, in your case, but for me, I put all this pressure on myself and there's no hope of any of this stuff coming off ever. Like, I am so... In terms of the comedy ladder now, I am at the bottom. But I mean, I did have this conversation with Fred last week because I wrote up maybe, I'd say, 4 or 5 crime lands, and they do take me a bit of time. And then I had this idea. I was like, I'll write something up and I'll send a few emails and I'll put on my desperado cap and ask, is there any chance I can come on and talk about being a new parent? And you're cringing for yourself. But I mean, I'm also in a privileged position because if I didn't have a supportive partner who said, look, I'll do the next night feed or I'll, you know, give him a bottle because I do breastfeed Ted throughout the day. So if I'm doing bits and bobs, I'll be doing them at night.
Yeah.
But if I didn't have a partner to help me with that, like, I wouldn't be able to do it. And it did strike me the other day because I was so delighted with myself. I was like, I've got loads of crime lands written up. I sent off a few desperado emails, friend requests still pending, didn't get responses to the desperado emails as of yet. You probably know me from my Instagram, where I don't mean to brag, but I do have 5,400 followers. But yeah, so like, I probably need to check my own privilege, but it does make me quite cross because.
No, that privilege
going up. It is a bit Mark Wahlberg. I know it is our reference point when it comes to men and, you know, their, I suppose their approach to family time. But it is that buzz of, oh yeah, then I have family time between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m. And Baz is all about the family. We get that. He's mad about the kids. He seems to be an amazing dad, all the rest. But as you say, especially somebody like yourself who has the 3 kids and the job and the scooter and it's just juggle, juggle, juggle. I mean, this is why we've been meeting up in car parks for years to record a podcast at all times of night, because we've just been trying to make it work despite our commitments. So to be facilitated in that way is pretty amazing. And you'd want to be given a shout out to the person who allowed you to do that, because that's what it is. It is somebody else in your life allowing you to do that. Like, if I said to Fred, I'm going to go off to my rented office for the day and here's Ted.
I know.
I mean, my God, and I'm not saying, like, if I really wanted to do that, it's regardless of gender, you know, you'd like to think your partner could facilitate that. But I mean, wow, you'd have to be grateful to that person and you would have to be, like, giving that person shout outs left, right and center, and you'd have to acknowledge, I couldn't have done it without that person.
Yeah. And I suppose, maybe in fairness to Baz, I'm probably, like, when I'm saying it to you, we're probably like personalizing it in a way. But in another way, if you look at it, and this is not his fault either, in fairness, but if he was on that podcast as a woman and he was telling that story, nobody would be fucking applauding her.
Oh, no way.
People will be going, what the fuck was that cheeky bitch up to? They're like, sorry, she's off the road. She's lost her job. And now she's going out to pursue her dream at expense while her husband is at home with the 4 children.
Well, she definitely, I mean, look, it goes without saying, she wouldn't be applauded more.
No. Big time.
She's going to be judged more. And certainly it will be a lot harder. It's just always a lot harder for any woman to get a second chance at things. I mean, that's why, I mean, I've discussed with you, like, I mean, I've gotten, you know, I mean, even say the Tommy show, I know I've talked about it before, but like, that was such a big opportunity. And I feel I really did not do well at that. Like, I just did not do well. It was probably a time in my life when, because I was teaching during the day, I just had a lot going on. I think I was probably exhausted as well. I feel bad saying that when I didn't have kids at the time, but I was doing a lot of driving. I was teaching during the day. I was doing the Tommy show in the evenings. Then I was driving around the country doing the tour. I mean, some of the shows with Tommy, I just did so badly. I really did fail at that time in my life. I was failing badly.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've kind of come to the point where, and it's really heartbreaking, because I did feel at the time I did give it my best, but it was just maybe, I don't want to put it down to bad timing, because that suggests, it was beyond my control, but it was just a bad time for me. But I mean, I'm not going to get a chance like that again.
No,
and
first
I'm not
of all,
saying, I mean, Baz, is, I think he is an exceptionally charming and a likable presenter. So I'm not putting myself on a par with Baz, but I'm just saying, and I'm not making it gendered, but I've actually come to accept, I'm like, I probably won't get a second chance at that. And I think everyone probably does wish for a second chance and hope for a second chance. And I wouldn't begrudge him a second chance, but I do think as women, you just get less chances.
I suppose part of the privilege or whatever that I haven't acknowledged there is that he was already at a certain point in his career where he could do that. But I just feel like, just acknowledge your misses in a nice way. And it's just, I suppose it just pisses you off because I'm not like big on trying to put gender on everything at all. In fact, a lot of the time it pisses me off when people make something gendered. But it was just, to me, listening to that, it was glaringly obvious that if a woman was telling that story, that it would not be. And I've heard that story. I've heard him tell that story before.
But
it wouldn't be met with the same fair play to you.
Well, it would definitely, it would 100% be coloured in a different way. And I can tell you this much, if a woman was telling that story and had a few kids at home, they would 100% be asked by the interviewer, and what about the kids? Like, was your partner helping with the kids?
Yes,
like,
of course.
You would be asked about the kids.
Of course, that you would have been asked how exactly. You see, like, so I suppose my issue isn't with Baz, really. My issue is with society, because he would not be asked, and how did he juggle childcare? How did he juggle home life while he was doing all of this?
Yeah.
He would never be asked that. And of course, he was in a position, he was well on in his career, and people loved him, still love him, will continue to love him. But on another note, like, you were not terrible on the Tommy show. You don't just get like one chance to do one thing and then that's it. That's not how it works.
Well, I mean, I
think
was,
we all know that's not how it works.
I'm just saying that I think the whole second chance thing is a sensitive subject for me, but I find it particularly like emotive, because I just often, even during lockdown, and I guess you're trying to throw so much stuff at the wall and hope that it sticks. So you're sending emails and you're coming up with ideas and proposals, and everyone's like, sorry, who are you again? But you do come back to that time when you think that could have been something very big for me, and I feel I failed at it. I did try my best, and I just did not, it didn't come off for me. But I would never begrudge someone a second chance, like, absolutely not. But I just think it, regardless of the industry, and not to be repeating myself here, but I do think it is harder for women to get that second chance. Delighted that Baz got it. Would he have got it if he was a woman? He might have, but I think it would have taken him a longer time and he would have been less likely to get it. And I think certainly, fair fucks to him for, getting up every day and working it and all the rest. But I think it's nothing that the likes of you and I wouldn't do. And many other people, by the way, that we know that would be, throwing everything at the wall and hoping.
But sure,
people would do it if they were in a position to do it. Now, that's not to take from the fact, it's great that you're working hard. But I know you and I, and like many of our peers, work so hard in the hope that something will come off for us. And like, certainly in my instance, as of yet, like, it hasn't. Hopefully that might change.
Yeah, but Julie, the Tommy Show, let's just put that into context for a moment. You were doing the Tommy Show, you were covering Fred because he was doing Dancing with the Stars. So it was only going to be as long as Fred couldn't do it.
I was the queen of the retakes.
It wasn't a live show.
I know.
You didn't puke.
Really tough.
Did you collapse? Did you puke on somebody in the audience?
No,
did you start speaking in tongues? Did you start speaking a different language? Did you have a stroke?
Well, I mean, there was a smell of burnt toast, but I don't think it was me having a stroke. It was probably the director who was so mithered by me. But I guess, you see, I was just totally inexperienced. I mean, I look back now and I can remember I didn't even know to hold my face, like just to give it a beat so that they could edit it. I didn't know what camera to look in. I was just so green.
Fault. You'd never done anything before. What had you done before?
I know, but I was probably just a bit of a weirdo because my crippling insecurity just manifested itself. And I really went in on myself. So I wasn't even I probably wasn't even a pleasant person to be around because I was so nervous and so insecure about the whole thing. And I just felt totally out of my depth. So I do think that anyone in that studio on RTE was just probably like, where is your one, like, where did they get this person from? It was just, I think you had to be there to just realize how bad it was.
To feel the energy.
But I mean, it was all stemming from me. I mean, obviously the team were great. It was just that I was so bad. And then I felt so bad because, you know, I felt that Tommy had like given me this opportunity and I just was totally messing it up every single day. It was just really, really shit time. And like, I know, I mean, it's not like I would have gotten anything in RT anyway, but I do know that on the basis of that experience, I would never be getting anything from them ever again. I know it was obviously an individual production company, but I'm sure word gets around and that people were well aware of the fact that I was so crap. Sure, I meet people now and they talk about Fred being on the show, and every now and again I say, oh, you know, I was on the show, and they're like, were you? Like, I feel like everyone has just deleted it from their minds.
Yeah, but I'm sure Fred was on at the first series when they were probably like pumping the ads and the promo and stuff. So people might be just saying, oh, I know, like I could meet somebody and say, I could acknowledge the fact that they're in something and tell them it's great. And not that I'm lying to them, but I haven't fucking seen, I've seen the ad on the telly. I mightn't have seen the whole fucking thing. Or I know the name of somebody's podcast. I say, oh, that's brilliant. Like, how are you getting on? I hope it's going well. I mightn't have listened to a single episode. So it might have just been the fact that he was more visible in people's minds. It doesn't necessarily mean that they watched the series that you were on and they're completely blank of ever seeing you on the screen. They probably just didn't watch the thing at all.
I still feel so bad about it because sometimes I think, oh, maybe I should just like ring Tommy and apologize. But then
you didn't do a screen test for it. Did you ever do any like rehearsals?
Oh yeah, like you would do a thing of like, you're going to stand here. But you see, you can't rehearse because Tommy doesn't know who the guests are. Like, it's all a complete surprise. I think it was maybe that part of it as well that kind of freaked me out because it's all riding on you. Like, it really is top secret. Like, Tommy is just locked away and he has no clue who the guest is. Like, he really, really doesn't. So maybe it was just maybe that high level of secrecy, which is the magic of the show. Maybe it was that combined with like my own insecurities that it just manifested itself in such, like, I was just such a disaster. But I mean, I was thinking even recently, maybe I should ring Tommy and apologize for being so bad. But then I feel that's kind of announcing your own anxiety because that was like 3 years ago. You know, I'm sure Tommy has not given
it. Was it 3 years ago?
A second thought. Would it be 3 years ago? Maybe two years ago.
Okay.
So Fred, they're recording it this month. He was on it last year and I was on it the year previous.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So 2 years. But yeah, so I won't ring him to apologize at this late stage because he'd probably think I was in AA. You know, they always make you do that. And I ring everyone you've ever wronged to apologize. You're like, oh, that's going to take a while.
Sorry, I was just going to say something really cruel.
That
I was just like, you ring Tommy and Tommy says, were you on the show?
I know.
And you're like, does anyone know I was on the show?
I think Tommy's forgotten it as well. I would say he's also from his memory.
No, but I think, in fairness, you never did a screen test. You didn't get to do rehearsals. I mean, did you even do rehearsals in your dressing room backstage and get to say the name out loud before you said it on stage? Well, nobody told you where to look.
Well, no, they did. Like, look at the light. Come on. Like, let's take a bit of personal responsibility.
If you hadn't been in a studio, a television studio before, like, you know what I mean?
Well, I think the director in particular just was really pissed off at me because I was just so bad. I mean, I guess because you're mid-30s, you're not a child, and like you've just appeared out of nowhere and everyone's like, what is this about? Like, I think people just didn't get it. So then
they just assumed that you had prior experience or something.
Well, I do. Yeah, no, the director in particular was like, where did you get this one? I would think he just had that look written on his face the whole time. And then it was like the direction would come in and be like, can you just look at the camera? Like, it was very, you know, come on now. But that's fair enough because you don't have to do a lot. I do joke about it now saying I had the toughest job in there, which was like just saying the three names. Like, Tommy just had to do the interviews and we'd all laugh. But I mean, seriously, how do you mess that up?
Yeah, but it was obviously a difficult environment, whatever went on there.
Well, no, I mean, but the team were great. I mean, you know, I would still be in touch now with, like, you know, some of the production team and stuff. And, like, you know, they're all nice people. Yeah. It was just that I was really bad at it. I don't know. But my point being, we've kind of digressed now because, you know, you were talking about Baz and stuff.
I think he's a super talented guy, you know, very charismatic, very likable, whatever. But I suppose it just when I was listening to it, I just thought, I wonder what
it's harder for women, I think.
Yeah, I wonder what this story would sound like if a mother of four was telling the story. I don't know whether she'd be able to tell the same story, even if that I think she'd have to tailor her story a little bit, you know, that kind of way.
But I just will be asked, you know, from her kids would be the first thing. And then also it's like that film Pursuit, you know, The Pursuit of Happiness. The whole thing is that Will Smith is so amazing because he's juggling. And you're like, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what every mother does every single day. And I know dads do it as well before the dads get in touch. I know they do. But yeah. I just think if we're honest here, the women do it a little bit more and a little bit more often. And that was essentially, you know, Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness. I was like, my God, look at him. It's like the Kramer versus Kramer thing. You know, you never see it from Meryl Streep's point of view. We just see, like, Mr. Kramer losing his shit over burning the toast in the morning, and he's like trying to, you know, tie his own tie, and this is fucker, like, and you know, the little boy just gives him a look of, I know, dad, like, it's, I'm so sorry you've been put in this situation. I mean, that film is just about juggling.
Yeah, and I think it's really good I think it's really good to use that film as a very current reference, but
my references. Things like, you look like Cindy, you're like Cindy Crawford, and people are like, who? Oh, you mean Cara's mom? Okay, thank you.
But sure, look, we're all products of the patriarch, and we all feed into it in our own little ways every single day without even realizing it. Men, women, and children. But you know when something just hits you and you just go, oh. But then at the same time, what the fuck do you do about it? Absolutely nothing. What can you do about it? Absolutely nothing. It just you hope that it changes over generations. And of course, the men of our generation and the fathers of our generation are completely different to the generation before them. You know, the change is there, evident to see.
But yeah, and it's all incremental.
Yeah, but it's just, I suppose, when you listen to somebody chatting about someone and you like the person and respect the person, you're like, thank your missus! Thank your missus! Because she fucking hell thank you. Just saying.
No, it is very true. And I see, I am laughing.
I think a lot of the time.
Kramer reference. I think that's why I'm a pop cultural guru.
Yeah.
Move over, Fiona Jay. What do you know about Kramer versus Kramer?
But I think it's funny, and I even find myself doing it, right? So, like, say if I have to go out and do something for work, like that, say, is not my 9 to 5, but I go out and do something for work, right? I'm just using this as an example.
I get it. You're getting gigs. I get it, Emma. I'm happy for you.
Oh yeah, I sense that. So anyway, I go out for something work related and I come back and just say, I go, oh, did the boys have their lunch? Oh, thanks for giving them their lunch. And then you're kind of like, why the fuck am I thanking my partner who is their father for giving them their lunch? He would not feel the need to thank me for doing the same thing. You know, I'm feeding into, and like, you know, like, I don't mind saying, like, Shane fucking cooks the dinner every night and all, like, you know what I mean? Whatever. It's not like I'm at home here, like, little housey fucking tied to the sink by any stretch. But I'm just like, I'm feeding into that thing. I'm like, why the fuck am I thanking, you know what I mean? Like, why the fuck am I thanking him for shit?
I know. Well, when you were saying about us all feeding into the patriarch, my immediate thought went to how I praise Fred when it comes to the housework. That was my immediate thought as well. So, I mean, for example, today now I had a couple of bits and bobs that I wanted to get done and I was like, look, would you mind taking them? And I was like, oh, thanks so much for doing X, Y, and Z. If you want to see like more of a behavior, it's easier to praise it when it's done than to just chastise someone for not doing it. So rather than saying, why didn't you do the bins today? You might say, oh, thanks so much for doing the bins. And then they will be done again because people do respond better to praise. Like that's just what I always think. If you want to see somebody do something more, just praise them when they do it and they tend to do it more. That's my thinking.
Yeah, I suppose, but like, sure, obviously the other side of
it's not something I'm necessarily doing in a conscious way, but
you come into the kitchen and Fred's emptied the dishwasher. Oh, did you empty the dishwasher? Thanks a mil. Why the fuck are you thanking him for emptying the dishwasher? Is he coming in and thanking you?
It's because we are of that generation whereby like the dads weren't necessarily doing the dishwasher. Now, my dad would have done a lot of housework, say now if my mom wasn't home or whatever, dad would like, you know, take care of the house and all that kind of crack. But like with mixed results, because even the last time I saw dad, it was like maybe 4 p.m. in the day. And he informed me, this is when I used to put you to bed when you were in primary school. I was like, it's 4 p.m. in the day. Like, come on. We all had a good laugh. But I guess it's just, you know, I don't know how much housework dad was actually doing if he was putting me to bed at 4 p.m. in the day. But we are of that generation where it wasn't a given. But whereas now, like, say, Ted,
it should like, be a given, I'm sure.
So like say Shane now does the dinners, like Fred, you know, would do a few dinners. So Ted's going like, okay, it's totally normal to do a dinner. It's totally normal for me to empty a dishwasher. Because I know like with my previous partners as well, they and, you know, I would say the vast majority of them, their mothers would not have necessarily instilled in them, you need to be as much of a homemaker as your partner.
Yeah.
That was not something that, like, their mothers, I think virtually all of them were, like, stay-at-home moms. The moms did the dinner. They did the cleaning.
They did the housework, like, and, yeah.
Yeah.
Everything to do with the house and childcare was their job. And yeah. Yeah. Oh, no, so I suppose that's probably why it is. It's kind of the...
Well, reason I praise Fred is because I want him to do it more. And it does, but in saying that, I will praise Fred for doing something and I will get annoyed if somebody says, oh, isn't he great about Fred? You know, if somebody says, oh, yeah, he's done the dinner, isn't he great? Why is he great? So it annoys me when other people would praise Fred, but yet I do it myself. So we are part of the problem.
Well, this, yeah, I know, this is it. Like, or yeah, people asking you, oh, is Shane babysitting the kids? No, he's actually with his children. He doesn't babysit. Like, it's just...
Oh, well, that's a massive pet peeve. Yeah.
And I've had people say that to me in comedy, being 100% serious. And I've had people say to me about things, so-and-so asked about you doing whatever gig or, you know, whatever, but I told him like that you have the kids and everything, so you that probably wouldn't be a runner for you.
I know, they're so considerate like that, aren't I? Mean, we're so lucky to surround ourselves with all these considerate men.
I know, but anyway, give Keith's podcast a listen. As I say, I do like Baz, like the podcast. It was a little listen. Maybe I just helped me get out some pre-menstrual tension that I needed to get out of my body. Yeah.
But I mean, I think, you know, I will be on the exact same page with you in terms of how, like, you with this guttural reaction to this. I think a lot of people would. And the whole point of the podcast is that we're honest about things and our opinions.
As you know, Up to 90 is part of the podcast network that is Headstuff, which has a plethora of fantastic podcasts to choose from. Every week, we're going to promote one podcast that we think you might like to check out. This week, it's Behavioural Vaccine.
Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Porrig, and we host the Behavioural Vaccine podcast.
We're behavioural scientists who met through improv comedy.
And so each week we bring the two things together to explore how behavioural science can be applied, but in a fun way.
There's a little bit of research.
There's a good bit of messing.
And there's loads of practical tips on everything from how to save money to how to maintain your friendships.
Think about this like a behavioural vaccine to get you through winter 2020.
Go on, sure, give us a listen.
I've no real news. Fred had a 6-week checkup this week, so he did well, thank God.
Sorry, and, Fred or it Ted? It sounded like you said
Fred.
I think you did say I'm Fred had a 6-week.
I didn't think this thing true at all because I keep saying things like, "Come on, Fred, we'll get you changed," or "It's bath time, Fred." And as for the "Aren't you gorgeous?" and Fred's like, "Thanks, Pichini, thanks, Emil." I mean, it just goes on and on. But Ted had a 6-week checkup. But hilariously, I'm sure people have been stung for this before. That you go in. And next thing, it was a case of get up there now and I'll have a look at your episiotomy. Now, I had completely forgotten that that was going to be checked. So I just cannot remember the last time I had showered and you're jumping up there. And I'd say she could just tell from her reaction that I had not seen this coming. And there is something about Ted just looking up at you and you're just looking at Ted saying, "Ted, I don't want you to see this."
Seen the but, crime, divert your gaze.
Like, exactly, there's just yellow tape all over this area. You're like, please, just Ted, no. And he just locks eyes at you and you feel so judged. But anyways, that's all good. And totally stung for that. So that was my event of the week. And then we found out we had half planned to get married the first week of December, but we got a text and a call from the hotel to say that they're not going to be open.
Okay.
So that is a sign from the universe. We're not getting married. I'm keeping it casual with Fred. I just don't want to commit too soon and we're just going to keep it free and easy for another while because I do think that is a sign. Just stay single for another while.
Okay. Yeah. Well, sure. Like, what's the rush?
We'll see what's going to... Yes, this is it. So that has been delayed, but sure, that's grand. I mean, we were only really saying, oh, we might just you know, do the whole legal side of things. But yeah, then it turned out our parents mightn't have even been able to come. So we were like, no, it's all getting a bit complicated now.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
I was having a think earlier on regarding the Halloweens of my youth and like favorite costumes. And I think my favorite was when I insisted as dressing as Vivian from Pretty Woman. So I had like a blue, but instead of like a blue mini skirt, my mom made me wear like a blue maxi skirt, which I'm not quite sure was that Vivian's vibe. But so I had like a white kind of spaghetti top, crop top thing and a blue maxi skirt. And then I was just going around telling everyone like across Dingle, all the houses, you know, like the usual chit chat, what are you dressed as? And I was telling everyone I was Vivian from Pretty Woman. And it was just met with such confusion, but also because I had a flashback to the line that I kept repeating, which was the one line I knew from the film off by heart. So that line where she says, I haven't done drugs since I was 14, okay? You know, when he comes into the bathroom and he's like, okay, I don't want any drugs in my house. Okay, take your stuff and you go. And then it's like, she's like, what? I had strawberry seeds in my teeth. I'm flossing. You should look after your gums. Like that bit.
Oh, God.
And everyone's like, what the hell is wrong with this girl? So that was the line I kept repeating. I haven't done drugs since I was 14 and going around my blue maxi skirt.
What age were you when you dressed up?
Well, I mean, I suppose, when was Pretty Woman? Like 89? Maybe 7?
Jesus Christ.
1990?
Did you see?
Well, it's just, you know,
I don't know what was going on, what people were dressing us up as back in the day. Did you see my picture of my Halloween costume?
Did I see it somewhere? Were you dressed in like khaki in kind of an army outfit? Was it green?
Judy, I've caught you out yet again. You see my stuff and you scroll past it.
But was it on Twitter? Because I start to sweat when I go on Twitter. Here, I'm going to go on to your Twitter. Hang on. I'm going to see. I'm going to see basically now, Emma Doran.
The story was that my mom dressed me up as a soldier.
I did look at this. Can anyone tell me what my mother dressed me up as?
So sorry, let me get this straight. So you did look at this and you decided not to engage with it at all.
I'm looking to see who engaged. Well, no, I probably, to be fair, well, I probably had Ted on at the time.
It was on my Instagram and it was on my Facebook page. And you're at this crack before Ted was on your tit now. Come on. Who are you copying?
Well, now, I haven't been on Facebook in about 7 years, I would say, at this point. But listen, I'm kind of scared to engage online at the moment because anything I say seems to be the wrong thing. And then before I know it, I'm trending on Twitter.
I'm slagging you. But the most questionable thing about my outfit was that my mum blacked me up.
Yeah, I mean, there is a bit of a blackface vibe, but I do think like my brother did go on as Mr. T back in the day. So like, I just think a lot of people were totally oblivious to just how offensive blackface was in the 80s. Know.
Well, a girl actually messaged me. Hang on, let me just find her message. It was so funny. She was talking about costumes back in the day and she said, oh yeah. She messaged me and she said, my mom dressed me up as Miles Davis for Halloween when I was 6. She found a toy trumpet for 50p in a car boot sale and thought it was a good idea.
Yeah, there was always something that people found and they were like, yeah, that's the inspiration for this costume.
But who dresses up as 6-year-old as Miles Davis?
As Miles Davis. I know. But, you know, I actually love those kind of mad ones. Like, did you see the Mary Lou McDonald was fantastic.
Oh, no. Who
the
was
girl
Mary
who was dressed up as Mary Lou McDonald this year.
Oh, a little girl, was it?
Yeah, it was funny. So she had like the brown hair, the bob, and then she had like, you know, a red blazer and the statement necklace and like the black tunic. So it was very, very, I have to say. And I think she she must have had this mole put on. Otherwise, she is like essentially Mary Lou's mini me. But she even had like the little beauty mark, the little mole. Mole.
Oh yeah.
I mean, look, if Melania Trump gets a body double, surely Mary Lou qualifies for a body double at this stage. But I mean, I like my big fear, like anyone who knows me from my going out days, the early years of this century. So like kind of, you know, turn of the millennium time. Emma, like I was like mahogany. I was going so overboard with the fake tan. Like my biggest fear is that those photos are going to be unearthed and people will think I was actually trying to do blackface. Like it was so bad, the tan. Like it was mahogany. Like you think I'm joking, but it was dark. It was so, so bad.
I don't think there was many of me with the face wasn't an issue because I just stopped at the neck.
Yes, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think never. That's when your mom was like, that's enough.
I think so, yeah.
As an adult, I was never really into the dress up as Halloween because I was always looking to sex it up. Like the only time I dressed up was that time, I think I said it on the extra episode, that there used to be this thing called Hell and Hanny's, which was essentially like you would go there just to get the shift. And like every male just turned up in a white shirt and a black tie and said they were a reservoir dog. Like it was such bullshit. meanwhile, I'd be fake tanning for weeks. So I would rock up I remember one year I went as Daisy Duke. Was it Daisy Duke? Jessica Simpson's character.
Yeah.
Do you remember she did the Dukes of Hazzard?
Yeah.
So I dressed up as Daisy Duke and I, like, it was just an excuse for me to set it up. Like, I'm not going to lie. But I'll give a shout out to Pete Fannery, who now owns the Fish Box, which is like our favorite takeaway in town. Had a lovely fish box last night. Thank you so much. And he did ask me, did I come as a prostitute? And he wasn't actually joking. It was just the nature of the outfit because I just had everything out. I was like, listen, I'm getting the shift. Come hell or high water. So I just did everything hanging out. And he was like, have you come as a prostitute? And I was like, no, as Daisy Duke. And he'd no idea what I was talking about. But I would say, first of all, there's nothing fishy about my box. Woohoo, thank you. I'm here all weekend. And also, it's a lovely takeaway, is the fish box.
Is it? God, you know, like, I've had my dinner, but I would love a fish and chips now.
Oh, so well, I got this monkfish wrap, so it's like monkfish in a wrap. And then, like, what I like to do is I like to order the salad instead of the chips and then have half of Fred's chips. Yeah, that's kind of how
it doesn't count, like, then, yeah, obviously.
Oh, it's like it goes without saying. But it was lovely. And you know, then, like a monster, at 11 p.m. last night, I rang Fred, he was in the kitchen, and I asked him for a scone. So then he brought up a scone to me. Yeah, but sure, then of course I did the usual, oh my God, aren't you so good? You're so good. And then he went down to the kitchen and I rang him again to ask for another layer of butter on the scone. He'd already buttered the scone, but I just felt it needed more butter. And then he brought it up and I was like, I just said to Ted, there has to be a middle ground here with your dad and the scones, because there were just there were teeth marks in the butter when I bit into it then the second time round. But it was still a lovely snack. But like, you know, it's a slippery slope when you're having fish and chips for dinner and a double layered, in terms of butter, double layered scone at 11 p.m. as a snack. It is a slippery, slippery slope.
God,
I could be using that time to work for my second chance, but I'm not. I'm in chance. Bed.
Is that going to be the name? Is that going to be the name of the autobiography? Second Chance. Chapter 1, 2, 3, and 4, The Tommy Tiernan Show. Chapters 5 through 9, The Instagram.
Instagram. Oh, you know it. Well, like, basically, look, The whole chapter on Instagram is just going to be me pleading my case, asking people to follow me on Instagram. I have no idea why it is not growing. Like, I'm worried. Have I just been, am I like a bot? What's going on? Am I a bot? Is that why I'm not coming up on people's feeds? It could not possibly be that people don't like me.
I think it's because you're getting, I think you're getting shadow banned by the algorithm from when you bought the followers.
Oh God, but that was like drunk internet shopping 3 years ago, Emma. And you know what?
The algorithm never forgets.
Oh, please don't tell me
doesn't care that you were drunk.
Because I tell you, do you know what? Do you know what? There were like, and then with poor old Blue Ivy, surfboard, and then Beyonce's like, running on that surfboard, and you're like, I'm pretty sure the surfboard is a metaphor for, okay, don't think about it. Blue Ivy's just like, running on that surfboard, surfboard.
Well, I wouldn't be slagging her now. Give it a couple of years. I'm sure you, Fred, and Ted will be releasing a single.
Oh, you know, come on, Ted's our pension plan. But he is our pension plan, 100%. No, because actually I think what happened was is that, you know, I ended up blocking because then I got this filter to get rid of all my drunk internet shopping bots. And it took me months to get rid of all these like bloody like accounts because I think you can do maybe 25 at the time. It's probably different now, but this was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But then I ended up blocking like totally normal people. I've no idea how this filter worked, but like I just had so many awkward conversations with people where I then would have to explain to them why I had blocked them and explain about my drunk internet shopping and how I tried to buy followers. But hilariously, do you know who I think I blocked? It's Kevin McGahern.
Oh, I think I remember you saying this to me, all right, Jen. You're like, why the fuck would I be blocking Kevin?
Because Fred was like, oh, isn't it great about Kevin's new painting show and all this content that I just wasn't seeing during the lockdown. And then I was like, oh, wait, hang on. So I put in Kevin McGahern and like some random Kevin McGahern in Wisconsin came up. And I was like, no, like I'm looking for the Kevin McGahern. So the Fred Kevin then showed McGahern. Me the account and I realized, oh my God. So then I had this really awkward exchange with Kevin on Twitter where I explained that I know. So then I was like, this is what comes up when I look for you. And then he was like, oh, I don't know why. You know, the way Kevin's just Mr. Nice Guy. So he's like, I don't know why that would be. But you're then like, I told the story about how I bought followers and I think that's maybe what happened. And nobody, Judy, the short answer is nobody gives a shit. Nobody, Kevin McGahern is not losing any sleep because I think he has me blocked as well. I'm not quite sure. But anyway, he claims he can't find me on Instagram, which I'm sure is what everyone's saying. And I was like, but I can't find you on Instagram. And so the merry dance continued. But we can contact each other on Twitter and WhatsApp, which is all that counts.
Drunk in love.
Maybe that's why people are trying desperately to find me, but they can't. That's what I'd like to believe. Anyway, surfboard. Running on a surfboard. Anyway, just to say before we wrap it up, we did announce this the last week, but just a quick reminder to our lovely patron people that we've now switched it up. And thank you to all the people who have switched it up and gone for this new tier. So we now have a singular tier.
Yes.
We do have the option of throwing us $2, but essentially you don't get anything for that. It's just kind of, you know, I guess being sound and throwing us a couple of euro. But for the $5 tier, you get access to our
extra
WhatsApp group.
Oh yeah, we're going to be setting up the Up to 90 WhatsApp group.
People have been asking this long overdue. Yeah. People have been asking.
So get ready for the audios.
The audios are happening and they're very, very real. So WhatsApp group, exclusive access to our WhatsApp group. You get the extra episode as well, our extra monthly episode of This Too Shall Pass. I'm still trying to make that title happen. It's going to happen any day now. And exclusive access to a live Zoom party.
A live Zoom. A live episodes, whatever. You get to dictate what you want, if you want a party, want an episode where you just like you turn off your screen and turn off your mic and just watch us do what we do, whatever.
It does sound a bit seedy when you're like, do you want a party? But yeah, so that's the vibe. And look, great if you can support us. If you can't, you can't, but we do really appreciate it. And love to you always. I've been Julie J.
I have been Emma Dorn. Thank you to the patrons. God bless.
This podcast is part of the Headstuff Podcast Network.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.